Chiland Podcast with David Amoyal.
Benvenuti, as we would say in Italy. Welcome to all of you that don't speak Italian. Thank you so much for joining us for the Friday episode of the Calcioland podcast. It's great to catch up with Alex Goldberg. Last week, I was on vacation in New Orleans. Thank you for Andrew Barker for doing that standalone pod with me. If you missed it, I definitely recommend it. It was a lot of fun. We are back to our normal routine on Friday. I kind of wanted to kick it up a notch, though, bring on two guests. So we have Jerry Mancini to give us his take on Sarri to Lazio, the beginning of the transfer window there. There's been so much going on at Milan that I kind of wanted a level set with on what's going on at the club with a great guest. So I had Daniele Mazzanti from Milano, one of the hosts of the Vox to Box podcast, to come on. That's at the end of the pod, available to all. And of course, we have a section just for our patrons. But today we're going to focus almost exclusively on transfers. We're recording this Friday morning before the Italy-Belgium game. I think most of you will hear it after the game. So we're going to focus on transfers. So Alex, I know you are Mr. Chelsea, but you are also very plugged in with a Premier League in general. So I wanted to talk a little bit about Ronaldo. This week, a couple of things. Di Marzio indicated that the only two teams he sees Ronaldo going to this summer would be either PSG or Man United. Yesterday, Juve introduced their new sporting director, Cherubini, Paratici's successor. And he said, you know, we have no indication that Ronaldo's leaving. We haven't received an offer. We're happy to welcome him back. We knew he really couldn't say anything else. But I'm curious about this, Alex. You have, I'm sure, a pretty good perspective on the Man United fan base, how they perceive things. How do you think there's a lot of appetite for Ronaldo coming back? And how would that be received if he were to return to Old Trafford?
Yeah, so, you know, I'll once again reiterate, I'm not a Manchester United fan, but I feel like in being friends with a handful of Manchester United fans and them being all over my timeline, yeah, I feel like I have a decent idea of how they'd feel about at least a certain handful of players coming to their club. So I do think there would be an appetite for Ronaldo coming back to Manchester United. I think it really helps that they already got almost the complete different version of Ronaldo, meaning they just got a young attacker in Jadon Sancho, someone who has his whole career ahead of him. So that they're obviously really excited about because he can help them in the now and the long term. Whereas if they got Ronaldo, it obviously would be more short term, but it's a great contrast. And if there's anything a Jadon Sancho needs, a Mason Greenwood needs, even a Bruno who's more in his mid-20s, but perhaps even other positions that they have younger players at, like Juan Bissaka in defense. If there's anything they all need, and maybe even Ole himself, it's another leader. And that's Ronaldo. Ronaldo may not be your classic leader, like rah-rah and get the team around him all the time. But David, I see Ronaldo to Manchester United, and I think most Manchester United fans would agree with this. I see Ronaldo to Manchester United similar to Zlatan to Milan. I do. Because I still think, and I assume many United fans will agree, just like Zlatan, Ronaldo will still have something to give to Manchester United on the pitch, especially if he's managed a little bit in the Premier League with as many competitions as they'll be in. I know Ronaldo will probably be fit for every game and want to play every game, but he'll need to be managed a bit more. So I do think when he plays, he'll be quite good, probably will be good for clutch goals, but just the way that he'll lead by example. That's the big thing. That's the thing I attested to Zlatan. Honestly, it's the thing I give to Thiago Silva as well this past season at Chelsea. Coming in at that age and not at all resting on their laurels, not at all being complacent, not at all ticking down in preparation, actually probably ticking up in preparation. We know the insane athlete, the insane disciplined athlete that Ronaldo is. You put him in that dressing room at United, and I would say that dressing room at United has really just been kind of a cluster for a number of years now, even when they've done a little bit better than other seasons. There's no set foundation. I don't feel like they have much of a backbone. You can have your own opinion on Ole, but I don't think he's necessarily good enough on his own in terms of being the leader of the team to take that team to new heights. But you put Ronaldo in that team? Yeah, I think a lot of United fans would have an appetite for it. And, you know, when I see Ronaldo spoken about by United fans, say when he's having a masterclass for Juventus or Real Madrid, they've always spoken so highly of him, like he's their own. So I think getting Sancho, David, would make Ronaldo returning almost unanimously appreciated and welcomed. I can't speak for every United fan, but you got to say majority at least would be totally down for it. You're always going to have your really anal fans that want to get into how much he's being paid and everything like that. But nah, I think it would probably be welcomed with open arms because of getting Sancho first. And it also seems like, David, they are going to do maybe one or two more things in the market. Like if they get Sancho and Varane and then Ronaldo on top of that, yeah, I think they definitely have an appetite for Ronaldo. And I'll just add, I know it wasn't really about what I think. I think that would be a great move for United, and I wouldn't want, as a Chelsea fan, Ronaldo going to United. Not because I'm afraid that it's the Ronaldo of Real Madrid or maybe the beginning at Juventus, but because of what I just said. I don't want him to make them more serious of a team, and I feel like he would do that. So, after all that, David, do you think Ronaldo will actually leave Juve this summer?
Yes, I appreciate your perspective. So, look, Di Marzio said Man United are interested in Ronaldo, but at essentially half the salary that he earns now. So on top of that, there's also the issue of the tax law in Italy, which was an issue with Fonseca and Spurs. You know, this law in Italy where foreigners that come, that work there are only taxed on half of their income. Huge for Ronaldo. Also why you saw Messi's father, you know, investing real estate in Milan, but Ronaldo's at Juve, applies to his salary. So he would have to take a really big pay cut to make a move happen, at least on the Man United side. And we've talked about this in the past on the pod. I understand why people do it in the industry. Journalists, they all want to make it sound like Ronaldo has agency. And what I mean by that it's up to Ronaldo what happens next. But I've said all along that's really not the case. What matters is there another team willing to pay him to the level of what Juve are on the hook for next season? So Man United are like, well, we'd like to have you back, but at half the price there. And then he also has to worry about the tax aspect in Italy. So if he wants agency and he wants to control his destiny, he can do it, but it also comes with almost certainly a big pay cut. The one thing that I see, and look, I don't think it's particularly likely. United, I like how you put it. The Ibra thing makes sense to me, but I also wonder if Ronaldo kind of sees himself as now being in the stage of the career, like kind of Ibra at Milan now. He's been there. To me, PSG, if I had to say, is Ronaldo leaving Juve, that to me seems more likely, but it would have to be with Mbappé leaving first. I could see PSG, if they do lose Mbappé, and I don't think that's going to happen, that, Ronaldo not bad in the short term. And I think also for Ronaldo's legacy, it's another league title that he can win that doesn't have on his resume. So I would say that's more likely. From the Juve perspective, if they can save on Ronaldo's salary, yeah. But then you have to worry about replacing that goal production. Now, I guess if he goes to PSG, you're probably getting Icardi back in the deal, and then you go Icardi Dybala, which 2-3 years ago, you know, they were probably the most valuable players in Serie A on the transfer market. Maybe that works, but I don't know. I still feel that it's not an ideal marriage by any means, but I still feel at the end of the day, Juve and Ronaldo are probably still better off staying together, unless, of course, that PSG thing happens. On a side note, you know, Juve did that other capital infusion, $400 million XOR, their parent company. This is the second capital infusion that they've done in less than the past 3 years. COVID, obviously, a huge aspect of this. If you're a Juve fan, you shouldn't expect that money to really help them on the transfer market. I really don't expect them to do much. But I think, you know, compared to having to get a hedge fund on the side to finance, look for other buyers, at least if you're a Juve fan, you can say, you know, we still have our strong ownership there. But I don't expect too much from Juve on the market this summer. I guess that would change if PSG or Man U or Ronaldo agrees to take a big pay cut to go to Man United. So curious to see there. Ronaldo to Man United, I'm not sure if that would mean a swap with Pogba. I honestly don't kind of see that happening, to be honest. I think if Juve moves on from Ronaldo, yeah, they would have that huge salary slot, but then they have to replace those goals. So I don't know. Again, I think at the end of the day, they're still better off staying together, although it's not ideal. Before we get to the hot transfer topics, though, Alex, I have to say I've enjoyed seeing your tweets on Jorginho. Lukaku, obviously, we've been huge fans on the podcast. In your opinion, in Premier League circles, Champions League circles, you know, the areas you're usually in, which of the two players do you feel has kind of changed this perception more recently?
It's a really good question, because let's be real, both have been great in the Euros. And really, for the large part, both had been great in the club season. Lukaku, obviously, was better than Jorginho over the whole club season, but Jorginho had some big games and became a Champions League winner. So that sometimes can get you to a higher status automatically. Oh, man. You know, I would probably say Lukaku, in terms of his perception changing more than Jorginho's. And I just say that because Jorginho's been in the Premier League the last few years. So I feel like anybody who's not a complete troll has been able to view him somewhat objectively for the last few seasons. Now, with that said, I'm living proof. It's still hard to analyze Jorginho, in my opinion. He really splits opinion. You have some people who say he is absolutely amazing. He should be on the Ballon d'Or list, which, by the way, I think is ridiculous. But he should be on the Ballon d'Or list, and that he is world-class, no question about it. And then you have the other extreme saying this guy is the most unathletic footballer of all time and he's not good enough. I'm obviously somewhere in the middle. I think he's a good player. But it's kind of proof that you can watch him. You can be a Premier League fan. You can be a Chelsea fan. And you can have a completely different opinion on him than the next guy. But I still think most, if you put them on a lie detector test, they wouldn't be too surprised with the success he's having with the Azzurri. He's in a really nice spot. And I'm not taking anything away from him. He's obviously performing really well, but he's in a team where it makes sense around him. It's obviously a team that knows each other well, but they play to his strengths. They let him be the regista. They let him be the metronome. I remember that was a popular word, David, you would use a lot. Napoli fans would use a lot for Jorginho, the metronome, the nucleus. That's what he is in this team. And when Chelsea were playing well, that's often what he was for Chelsea. So I don't know if this has surprised that many people. And then again, the people who don't rate him still will say that they're not convinced. But where Lukaku is different is there are a lot of Premier League fans, David, and you know this, that once he left United, they didn't watch him at Inter. They didn't watch him at Inter. They thought it was the exact same player. Oh, he's just doing well because it's Serie A and it's not the Premier League. Premier League snobs, may I add, who I can't stand. But his success at Inter, they just chalked up to, oh, he's doing well over there. Good for him. Whatever. He won't be good back here again. They totally disregarded the fact that he's a better player now. His right foot's better. He's even in better shape. He's got a great character. So it always pushes him to do better. They disregarded all those things. So whether they want to admit it or not now, I think they've been able to see him on a different stage, right, that they're actually paying attention to. And I know they're like, oh, maybe this guy has really improved. So I have seen more people probably come around on Lukaku a lot more than Jorginho. But that's not to say one's performed better than the other. I just think we had so many outdated takes on Lukaku that, especially once he scored, what was it, the second goal? And I think it was against Denmark in the second game of the Euros. He scored that second goal with his right foot, and he created a lot of plays over on the right-hand side as if he was a right winger. I think it was that type of stuff that made fans realize, ooh, maybe he's not the same guy that was at United. So I would say Lukaku by a smidge. Yeah, Lukaku by a smidge. All right. So, David, as you said, it's hot transfer topic time. Let's jump into it. We couldn't be more in the thick of transfer mania. First one. Do you think Juve is more likely as a destination for Locatelli than Arsenal? I'm hoping you say yes, because I don't want Locatelli going to Arsenal.
Yeah, and by the way, I totally agree with a lot of what you said, Jorginho, Lukaku, and as much as I like Jorginho, I agree. The Ballon d'Or is a step too far, even for me, and I'm a big fan. So back to Locatelli. So look, to me, this is ultimately very similar to Chiesa at Fiorentina. Because look, Fiorentina would have much rather sold Chiesa abroad. I think Juve was literally the last team they would have liked to sell him to. But, you know, Chiesa had leverage. He had just 1 year left on his contract. And he said, I want to go to Juve. Comiso waited until the last second to avoid that and was left with no choice. Now, granted, Sassuolo and Juve have a great relationship. So it's in that sense, it's even easier for Juve. But I bring up that example because to me, the best thing that Juve has going in this case is the will of the player. Because look, Arsenal, although they're not in the Champions League, can certainly offer more money than Juve. Juve is probably going to want to structure that deal like Chiesa on a 2-year loan deal. But, you know, let's see if that flies with Sassuolo. Sassuolo's sporting director, Canevale, also pretty close to Juve. I actually thought Juve should have probably hired him when Paratici left. But that's neither here nor there. Said public, you know, Arsenal made us a good offer, but we have a good relationship and we'll meet with Juve later on. Maybe he was trying to publicly put pressure on Juve. Maybe also not make it seem like, you know, Sassuolo are just in it to help Juve, which I think a lot of people would kind of see it that way. But for me, at the end of the day, it comes down to if Locatelli thinks, you know what, I'm still very young, I can go to Juve. Juve actually really needs me. Like, they totally lack a player like that. Allegri wants him. So I have to say I'd give Juve a little bit more of an edge than Arsenal, again, because I think the will of the player here could go a long way. And Locatelli is certainly another player that have to distinguish themselves at this Euro.
Yeah, he's been great. It's crazy that the midfield Italy have, he could even be left out for a game. All right, David, can Atalanta beat Spurs in the race for Tomiyasu?
Yeah, look, we talked about it recently that Atalanta are trying to get Tomiyasu. Unlike other Serie A clubs, they can actually make real offers, cash money, not loans with option to buy. You know, they are one of the few clubs in Italy that is in that position. Here, they are interested in multiple Bologna players, but Spurs can certainly offer more. I wondered too if Paratici, who's now at Spurs and now has actually money to compete, probably also enjoys, now I can compete with Atalanta, which really tells you how much things have changed at Juve in recent years, that hypothetically has a better shot of getting it at Spurs than he would at Juve. So I don't know. I think it comes down to a little bit on the will of the player here too. Atalanta are interested in other Bologna players. Look, Spurs could certainly make a better offer than Atalanta, but maybe if they try to get either Svanberg or Schouten, they're also interested in Palacio, but he has an expiring contract. So I think this is closer. I would probably give Spurs an edge over Atalanta here. They don't play exactly the same position, but Atalanta are also interested in Lirola, who's owned by Fiorentina and played at Marseille, and he seems to kind of be their priority now. Granted, Tomiyasu can play both as a center back and a right wing back. Lirola more a right wing back addition for them. So at that point, I wonder, too, if they're going to keep Romero, because when I saw them linked to Tomiyasu, I was like, I wonder if they're getting him as a center back. And if they are, is he here to bolster with Romero, or, you know, be a backup. So I'm going to give on, I'm going to give Juve an edge over Arsenal on Locatelli, but I'll give Spurs an edge over Atalanta for Tomiyasu.
Okay. All right, David, how much of an upgrade would Musso be for Atalanta?
Pretty big. Look, I thought Golini last season was the best keeper I'd seen at Atalanta in the Gasperini era where they were doing well, but Musso was one of the three best keepers in Serie A. And when you look at Atalanta's lineup, there's not that many places where they can realistically improve. And what I say realistically is, yeah, of course, they could sign Messi, but what they can realistically do is sign a player that probably costs up to 20, 25 million euro. I think that's kind of their limit. They are getting Musso for right around 20 million. Again, very good keeper in his prime, an upgrade over Golini. They'll probably be able to make a plusvalenza over Golini. Kudos to Atalanta. You know, this is a thought that Napoli outsider had. You look at the landscape in Serie A, Atalanta maybe are going all in. And, you know, it would be very interesting if next season Gasperini takes a page out of the Sarri at Napoli and Conte at Inter playbook and kind of mill in the Champions League and go all in for Serie A. We know Atalanta like to compete all the time. But if they did that, man, that would be really, really intriguing. So, you know me, I'm pretty pumped about Atalanta. Kudos on this Musso move. Really, really good get for them.
All right. David, God, how many players is this team going to get? How likely are PSG to land Correa?
Oh, man, we could go on a big sidebar on a PSG. Yeah, look, Correa, you know, to me it's sad because when Sarri signed with Lazio, yeah, of course I was like, oh, this is going to be great for Milinkovic-Savic, Luis Alberto, but I was like, man, Correa under Sarri could really be unbelievable in Serie A. But realistically, Lazio aren't in the Champions League. They spent a lot on Sarri. They are going to have to get some players to change formations a little bit and philosophy. So the money is going to have to come from somewhere. Obviously, I wanted to keep Milinkovic-Savic, and I don't think there's a market for what Lotito would ask for him. But Correa as a super sub at PSG could be intriguing. PSG would like to offer a player. Let's see if Lazio do that. I do sadly think there is a chance he'll go because, again, I think Lazio is going to have to monetize on a player for sure. So we're going to keep talking about Lazio. I'm very glad to welcome my friend Jerry Mancini. I also want to take this opportunity to thank Jerry. He made a very generous donation, which we added to what we gave to the Insuperabili, the nonprofit we support in Italy. So I want to thank Jerry, and I also really enjoyed our chat.
Well, it's been a while since I've spoken to my good friend Jerry Mancini. I had a blast catching up with him before we started recording. Jerry is one of the most genuine, hardworking people that cover calcio. He's done a great job building a nice brand for himself. You can hear him with the excellent Alex Donno, one of my favorites, on Calcio Connection. You can read him on the Laziale and a lot of other great places. So, Jerry, it's always a real pleasure to catch up with you. Bentornato to Calcio Land.
Always great catching up with you, David. Thank you for having me on.
Okay, so let's talk about your boys, Lazio. So I'm going to start here. I know rightfully you were very attached to Simone Inzaghi. It looked like he was staying. I think a lot of Lazio fans were thrilled with the possibility of him staying, but he does end up going to Inter. So let me ask you this. How are you going to remember Simone Inzaghi, and what are you going to miss the most of him?
So 5 seasons with the team. He came in at a peak where Lazio were at its lowest, probably didn't have a game plan, a vision, a philosophy. And he has done that. I think that he's left Lazio in a position where they're able to compete at a higher level, and I was going to remember him for winning trophies. He won a Coppa Italia, he won two Supercoppa Italianas, and I think the biggest thing, even though the trophies were there and he was successful with Lazio, was the ability to get this team to the Champions League after 13 seasons. We've gone through so many managers that haven't been able to take this team to another level, who their owner, Claudio Lotito, doesn't spend much. Iglesias has been up and down in the last four seasons, started off well, has really tailed off, but credit to Inzaghi to get the most out of the squad in recent seasons. What I'm going to miss the most is Inzaghi's ability to get this team to play at such a high level with such limited depth. When you got players on the bench like, I don't know, Akpa Akpral, Wesley Hoot, you go through the list, there's more players, Patrick, and there's not a lot of good players that you can call off the bench in order to back up players like Luis Alberto, Sergio Milinkovic-Savage, Joaquin Correa, Chiro Immobile, but he's managed to get the best out of this team and keep them within fighting for a Champions League spot every season. So that's what I always remember him, is being able to allow this team to grow, be successful, win trophies, and get the best out of the players. And I think lastly, Chiro Immobile and Luis Alberto, two players where they were such at a low peak in their careers, and Inzaghi has managed to get the best out of them. And I think that's one thing he's going to excel very well with Inter, is he's going to get players to play at a much higher level and get them to play much better football, in my opinion.
Well said, Jerry. And I completely agree with you on Tare, who was great up to 2 years ago. And it's tailed off. And kudos to Inzaghi for keeping high standards there. But successors right up my alley. Jerry, you've known me for a while. You know Sarri is my guy. I am very excited that he's at Lazio. I think he's going to do really well there. But obviously, it's also an adjustment, right? I mean, it's a change in formation, change also in philosophy. I think Inzaghi, great manager, but, you know, I would say pretty defensive compared to Sarri. So let me ask you, A, are you excited? I know you would have preferred Inzaghi to stay, but with Inzaghi gone, does Sarri feel like a good replacement to you? And are you concerned about having to change formations and philosophy?
So Sarri was is the best option available on the market. And it was a bold decision by Claudio Lotito to make sure that he got the best manager who can replace Simone Inzaghi. You don't want to go to, say, I don't know, there was the previous Torino manager, Watemazzari. You go to Watemazzari, it's a big downgrade because he's really peaked off since his time at Napoli. Who knows how long he's been, the last time you saw success from him. You want someone who is going to take this club and has good background experience, has success. And Chiro Immobile had a meeting with, I believe, with Lotito and said, we want someone who's coming in that is a high-profile manager who can take this club and leave it as a top-four team. And that's basically what they've done here. I know that his time was Juventus. A lot of people have mixed feelings. At the end of the day, he succeeded with that club and won a Scudetto, something they didn't do this season. Chelsea, he came in late from the transfer market, didn't have much time to acquire players, but he still had Chelsea play pretty good football. Jorginho played very well that year. You see Eden Hazard hasn't been the same since he's left. Chelsea won a Europa League trophy. I think that has a lot. He deserves a lot of credit for that. The transition for itself for Lazio, it's going to be, I think the 4-3-3 will come a season after when they're able to buy those players. I think the 4-3-1-2 might be the most suitable for them because it allows Chiro Immobile to still play as a in the front two, with either Correa or Caicedo, given if they both stay with Lazio. Luis Alberto will still have that major role in behind the forwards. And it's going to be hard to buy, say, three left backs. Or you need fullbacks and you need wingers. And the defense needs more addressing than the wingers right now. you saw this past season where they were really dependent on Radu, Cherby, and Luis Felipe to start. And I think they only started like 7 games in total in the season. And it really showed the depth was just couldn't handle it. Wesley Hoot started to tail off in the second half of the season. Patrick had to be over relied upon. And that's the last option you want to be playing against teams like Bayern Munich, who's going to get exposed. So the back line needs to be addressed first under Sarri. And I think that's what you're seeing already with Isai Husai. Already with Napoli, they're already addressing fullbacks first because that is the primary strength that they need to, the area that has to be addressed first under Sarri. And I think once they fix the defense, then the wingers come into play.
Yep. Well said there. Let me ask you, what players on Lazio do you think are going to be particularly exciting under Sarri? Like, I have to say, when I heard that Correa was linked to PSG, a little bit disappointing because I think he'd be awesome under Sarri, but I also understand that you can make a lot of money on him, and, you know, if that means keeping Milinkovic-Savic, so be it. But are there players on the squad in particular that you're excited to see under Sarri?
I think that's a great point what you said about Joaquin Correa. I personally would not sell him. People think that he can't fit under Sarri. I believe he can. His time with Sevilla in his final season, he played as a winger on the left side. People say that he's not able to play as a left winger. Not true. He's done it before. I think it was his primary position as well. I can see him playing as a backup to Luis Alberto as an attacking midfielder. He's been used that under Inzaghi on numerous occasions, especially when Luis Alberto has been absent due to injury. So he's always been an alternative. He can play up front with Immobile, like I said earlier. Second strike, he's always been like a false nine. So I don't see why Correa cannot be used. And I think if they do sell him, it's going to be a very big disappointment because he's been the second most productive goal scorer behind Immobile. Another player who I think will do very well under Sarri is Luis Alberto. I think you'll have more of an attacking role under him as opposed to playing less, like, deeper as a defensive player. He'll be the link up, and Sarri has already said that he's unsellable, and I don't blame him. He's the kind of guy who can do that one touch passing under Sarri that he likes. That quick passing where everything links together. And a guy like Alberto is very hard to replace. And we've seen what he can do with Immobile. And I think he can do much more with players around him if he becomes that key player in the midfield. And the last player who I think will strive underneath him is Milinkovic-Savic as well. This is a guy who has, I think he'll adapt. And he'll make him not just be that kind of defensive box-to-box midfielder. I think he'll be more attacking as well. I think he'll get his game into a different level where you'll see a new side to him that many didn't see. And Sarri's going to really value him a lot.
Yep, I totally agree. And you know, that's music to my ears there. So let's close on this before I ask you about your excellent pod with Alex Donno. A lot of people are going to hear this after Italy, Belgium, but so I'm just going to ask you this. What have you made of Immobile at the Euro and Acerbi? I personally think Immobile, you know, has done, for a lot of people, expectations are low for him on the Azzurri. I think he's done well. And I think Acerbi has been very underrated on the Azzurri in general because he's played quite a bit because of Chiellini's injuries for a while. He's been part of that streak of not giving up goals. And look, he came up big against Austria. So I hope you as a Lazio fan are proud of your two boys. But tell me, what do you make of Immobile and Acerbi at the Euro? And hopefully when people hear this, Italy will be playing more games.
Well, I'll start with Acerbi. And I think that given the fact that he had an injury versus Roma late in the season and should have came off, and I'm not sure if you remember that, and he said that it was a big mistake playing that game. And I guess that kind of was a slow start for him to the Euros because he hasn't been able to fully recover, in my opinion. But as the tournament has progressed, he's really transition very well in a back four with Bonucci. And I think this is encouraging for Lazio as well, especially Sarri, who plays with a back four. And we're seeing positive signs for him. And I think going into next season, this is a very good start for him to get that experience and try to transition out of the back three to a back four. Overall, I thought against Austria, he played really well. He was the better defender versus Bonucci, where he came back, made key challenges. I think sometimes Chirby struggles in 1v1 situations where he seems out of place, but I have to give him credit because his recovery is one of the best in football, where he's able to backtrack and just get back into position, which is phenomenal. For Ciro Immobile, I said that this guy was going to have a very good tournament heading into this Euros, and he has proven me right, in my opinion. I know a lot of people are going to say that he was poor against Austria. I don't think so. People got to remember that half of the passes that were delivered to him were far out of reach, and he can only do so much within stride. You know what I mean? Like, if passes are not placed properly, he can do what he can to track it down. I think overall, his backtracking to help the defense has been phenomenal. The fact that he chases down players, his effort's been amazing. He has scored two goals in three games, more than the likes of Harry Kane and Kylian Mbappe, who have really done nothing for their clubs in due respect. Like, I know they're two of the best players in the world, but what have they done? Like, Kane finally scored a goal in his last game against Germany and did nothing for almost, what, 90 minutes. And Kylian Mbappe didn't even score a goal for his country. And then you got Ciro Immobile, who just continues to get harassed for not scoring enough goals. But I think Mancini has really allowed him to really adapt to a front three. And overall, I think both have been really good for Italy. But with Immobile, I've been impressed. And I know a lot of people are going to say I'm biased because they know how much I like Immobile. But it's not just the goals that we're expecting from him. I think it's his overall game of how he makes other players better and allows to like let players be more free and create chances as well. So I think overall, Immobile has really stepped up during this Euros, along with the Acerbi.
Well, you know, Jerry, two things can be true at the same time. You are biased with Immobile, and I say that in the best way possible, and he has played well. So both things are true there. Before I let you go, and again, my friend, it was wonderful hearing your voice again. Tell us a little bit what's going on at Calcio Connection. You know, I'm a big fan of you, big fan of Alex Donno, the other host. So tell us what people can expect over there.
Well, we're basically doing two pods a week live. Normally, we never have a set schedule because of Alex's crazy work schedule. I think he's got a new gig coming up with Five Reasons Sports Radio, which I'm very happy for him. He's got his own radio show. It should be starting in July. Big things coming for him. He's been doing this off for Patreon. He has like inter-daily news he does, where he releases episodes, which is pretty cool. I didn't even know until I saw on Twitter. So that it's a good way for Inter fans to get their daily dose if they're very interested in that type of stuff. But yeah, just two episodes a week, and we just go on the fly and we just choose the topics that are most recent and we try to get people involved.
Well, great stuff. You know, I'm a big fan of you and Alex's people, so all the best. I really love to see the initiative you guys are working on. So, Jerry, I hope this is the first of a few times that we chat about Lazio on the pod this year. All the best, my friend. Always great to catch up with you.
No, thank you for always to having me on, and always great catching up as well. Thank you.
I'm so excited to welcome our next guest, my good friend Daniele Mazzanti, who is based in Milano. The last time we had Daniele on, it was right before the end of the season, and he told me he would have signed in blood for Milan to qualify for a Champions League spot. He didn't care
If it was second, fourth place, it was all about that. Daniele really wanted to hear the Champions League music again, and he got his wish. So we're going to look a little bit to a lot has happened since then, Daniele. So we're going to focus on that. But it's wonderful to welcome you back. For those of you not familiar with Daniele, he's one of the hosts of the best calcio podcast in Italian, probably the best one, period. Vox to Box, which we'll talk a little bit about at the end. But Daniele, always a real pleasure to chat with you. Bentornato to Calcioland.
Grazie. Thank you. Thank you for having me. And thank you for your kind words for on Vox to Box. And yes, since the last time we talk, it seems 300 years ago.
It does.
Everything happened in the meanwhile. And I remember that I told you that I really needed to hear the Champions League anthem. And when I saw the Super League, I was like, oh, come on. Like, I want the anthem. I want the Champions League. I don't want the Super League. Not this year. Not this year that we are in. Finally in Champions League again.
For sure. And as you said, a lot has happened since then. Super League, Milan's lineup will probably look a little bit different than maybe what we envisioned last time we talked. So let's start here, because I saw you tweeting about this yesterday, and I was going to ask you anyway. So we're recording this on July 1st. Gigio Donnarumma is officially no longer Milan player. We know he's heading to PSG. So let me ask you this very simply, Daniele. How are you going to remember Donnarumma as a Milan player?
I think that Donnarumma was probably the best goalkeeper I've seen in AC Milan jersey. I say that overall, he's even better than Nelson Dida, who is actually the best goalkeeper I ever seen in AC Milan jersey. Nelson Dida spent, like, I think two seasons, where he was probably the best in the world. And he was, like, surreal. You saw him in the goal, and you say, okay, you cannot be serious. As Gianmarco Roy said, you cannot be serious, because he did some astonishing saves, some of the greatest saves that I ever seen in the AC Milan games, etc. And I think that overall, Donnarumma probably is, but I'm pretty sure will be a better goalkeeper. And this is, of course, a pity for us AC Milan fans, because he is very, very good. And I think that there's not an AC Milan fan who can say that he's not a very, very good goalkeeper, even if our heart is broken, because we feel a bit betrayed, because of course we are supporters, we are emotional, and we cannot think with our brains talking about football. Because if you try to be a bit more rational, you can see why he is going to Paris Saint-Germain. Paris Saint-Germain right now, he's a team that can actually win the Champions League. AC Milan is far, really far from that point. So in order of talks about the career, et cetera, probably the PSG is a wise choice. Also, is going to earn like double the salary of this year. So we keep to call him Donnarumma, and this is the reason. But I think it's just because our heart is are broken. Our heart. So I think that he's very good, and I think we are going to remind his saves, etc. But we are ready to have a next chapter, and we hope that Super Mike will be a good goalkeeper. Like if you remember when we talk about this situation, this thing about the contracts of ACM, I told you that it sounds like a strange thing, but Donnarumma was probably the one that was easier to replace.
Yeah.
Because he is a great goalkeeper, but if you have a good goalkeeper and a better team, basically it's the same. I think that right now it's very important for AC Milan to renew the contract of Kessié, who is fundamental for us. He's the, for me, the best player in the team. So we need to keep him on the roster for sure. Like he's the most important in the team, even most important than Donnarumma, most important than Çalhanoğlu, et cetera,
I totally agree there. And well said. I think it was important to also acknowledge how good Donnarumma was. And as you said, he did land in a pretty good place at a very high salary there. But I also get why people are so resentful towards him as well. So I want to ask you about Çalhanoğlu, because I find this pretty interesting. You know, when I look at it from Inter's perspective, obviously the terrible Eriksen situation, which they couldn't plan for, they were already going to be in a tough spot on the transfer market without even having to consider finding an alternative to Eriksen. They act quickly, they get Çalhanoğlu. I think all things considered, they did pretty well there. But I want to ask you this. Do you see Çalhanoğlu as a bigger loss for Milan? Because, you know, there is, you know, a lot of data that shows that Milan did better when Çalhanoğlu was in the lineup. Or so bigger loss for Milan or better gain for Inter considering the Eriksen situation?
So I'd say right now it's a bigger loss for AC Milan because all depends on who will be the next number 10 of AC Milan. Right now, of course, is a bigger loss for us because we lost a player who were pivotal for us, who was pivotal for us. And I think that this loss is bigger than the improvement that Inter will have with Çalhanoğlu, because Çalhanoğlu did the best thing playing in a different position from Christian Eriksen, because Christian Eriksen was reinvented by Antonio Conte as a sort of second pivot, second volante, second regista. So the first choice in the Inter playbook was give the ball to Brozovic, who is the main regista of the team. But having Christian Eriksen on his left, on the left of Brozovic, create these two registas scheme, and that was the best Inter we saw this year. And Çalhanoğlu used to play as number 10, so like trequartista, but starting on the left of the left flank of the field. And so it's a different position. So I remember that a few years ago, I don't know, not remember who, probably Gattuso or Montella, I don't know, remember, tried to use Çalhanoğlu as mezzala, so as midfielder. And that was not a very good experiment. So I think right now, like Inter had to do something, and had to do something in like in a matter of days. So they move fast and they choose Çalhanoğlu, and I think that could be good for them. But right now, I don't think it's such an improvement. I think it's a bigger loss for us. But I think that if the AC Milan board will choose another good number 10, we will be okay. Because I think that there are a lot of good players that we can use in that position. My favorite was Rodrigo De Paul, but he's going to Atletico Madrid, because Rodrigo De Paul is a super player, and it's a pity that there are not so many Serie A fans around the world, but there are a lot of Liga fans around the world, so they will discover Rodrigo De Paul. And he's like a super trequartista, because he's like the best in the Serie A for dribbling. And one of the stats of this year for AC Milan is that we are like one of the worst teams to do dribbling in the last third of the field, so in the attacking zone. And De Paul was perfect for us, but he went to Atletico Madrid. So my first idea is having someone like Aouar from Lyon, because he's a sort of pure number 10, but he used to play in the same zone of Çalhanoğlu, so he will be perfect for Pioli. Because I think the most important thing in losing Çalhanoğlu is that for Pioli, Çalhanoğlu was very important. He did good things this year. The first part of the season was super from Çalhanoğlu. The second was not so good, and this is a sort of euphemism. But he was very important for Pioli, and he needed a man who can connect the midfield and the forward in a good way. And I don't think that Brahim Diaz is ready to be in the starting 11. He's good. He did well, but he's not ready from my point of view.
I completely agree. I have to say, I've seen Milan Twitter talk so much about Brahim Diaz, about the buyback clause and whatnot. But, you know, last season, I think he had 4 goals and 3 assists in 28 matches. It's not that, you know, I mean, he's got talent for sure, but I'm with you. I think he can't really be the starter. And the other thing that I think you said that was really interesting is how important Çalhanoğlu was for Pioli. Maybe he won't be as important as he was for Inter. I think you can almost make a case Bennacer is a better player than Çalhanoğlu, but when Çalhanoğlu didn't play, Milan almost missed him more than with Bennacer didn't play. And I love what you said about De Paul. I feel like every top team in Serie A could have used De Paul, and it's a real shame that he's going abroad. Anyone else that comes to mind that you can be realistic or not realistic as a potential replacement for Çalhanoğlu? You mentioned Aouar. Anyone else that you have in mind that maybe could be good?
So Messi is still a free agent, right? No.
As we're recording, yes.
Yes. Okay, no. Well, I don't know. I think that finding the right player right now is not easy. I heard a lot of names, but they were more midfielder and not number 10. So it's hard. I think that the great thing from the last season is that the board right now deserves some credit. So we trust them. We trust Maldini. We trust Massara. We know that they know what to do. And so let's wait. I Also, I also heard the name of Marcel Sabitzer, and I think Sabitzer will be very good because he's like a sort of Çalhanoğlu 2.0, so better than Çalhanoğlu. But I think that it's very hard that Lipsia, that Red Bull Lipsia, will sell him. But Sabitzer will be very good for us.
Interesting. Let's talk a little bit about Ibrahimovic. So obviously Milan had a lot of contracts that had to be renewed. The one they got done quickly was Ibra at a fairly big number. And obviously he had a huge impact, especially in the first half of the season, but he certainly struggled with injuries and especially after signing the extension. So let me ask you this, Daniel, if I set the over under for numbers of game played for Ibra, and this is just in Serie A, so all competitions separate, but just in Serie A at 20 mm-hmm. and a half, would you take the over or the under?
I think the under. I think the under, but I hope that Ibrahimovic will play less than 20 games because if Ibrahimovic could play less than 20 games in Serie A next season, that would mean that we have a striker who is a young striker who could be the first choice, and Ibrahimovic could play only few particular games, like, I don't know, in Champions League or big games, etc. I remember we talked about Vlahovic, the last time we talked to each other, and Vlahovic would be perfect, but he's very expensive. So I do not think that we are going to buy Vlahovic, but I think this, like, we need a young striker also for the future, and Ibrahimovic would be perfect to play like 10 games in Serie A and the other in Champions League, and being like the head of our restroom, so the guide for the other young guys, etc. So I hope under 20.5.
Okay. So we mentioned earlier the number 10 jersey is vacated. The captain's armband, Luca Romagnoli, has 1 year left on his deal. Maybe he'll get flipped, but with Tomori and Kier, there, he's not going to play much. So in your opinion, who do you think should be Milan's next captain?
I'd say Simon Kier without any doubt. And I want to say that I was thinking this even before what we've seen in the Euro with Eriksen, etc., because I think he's the second guide of the team after Ibrahimovic. He's solid. He's a very good player. He has a super good charisma. Because Ibrahimovic had a super charisma, but not always good charisma. And Kier, I'd say, is perfect. It's perfect for the armband, and it will be a sort of honor in having him as captain. Last captains we had were Bonucci, then Romagnoli, then Donnarumma, and that was not so good for the armband of Franco, of Paolo, of Gianni, Cesare, etc. So I hope Simon Kier. My second choice is Frank C. But the problem with Frank C, he's a sort of silent leader. He's not a vocal leader. And I think that Kier would be far better than Kessié as captain.
You made me realize that we talk often about the curse of the number 9 jersey at Milan, but we kind of have a curse with the captain's armband too. Let's end on some positive things. Milan keeps Tomori. I think it was a great move. I think the great move is the kudos to Massara and Maldini negotiating that, you know, that fee to buy him outright, 28.5 million, which at the time seemed, you know, like a lot. But the way he played at Milan, you look at the fees in the Premier League, would have clearly gone for more. So kudos to Maldini and Massara for negotiating that. We know Chelsea are not easy to deal with. So let me ask you, how important was it for Milan to keep Tomori?
Very important. Very important because it's a sort of message. Like, we believe in Tomori for now and for the future. Right now, almost 30 million are not peanuts, but for a defender from Premier League, 28 million are like, he's not so expensive. It's a good deal for us. He was perfect last year, like perfect, because he was a perfect fit to playing with Kier. Because he's very fast, he's good in 1-on-1, and we can play with our defensive line near the midfield with Tomori. So it's very important to have him on a permanent basis. And I think that in a world where football teams are devastated by COVID, et cetera, having a team who has spent like almost 30 million for Tomori and 15 million for Maignan, is good. It's a good message. Of course, the paradox is that right now we are not better than the last year because we lost Donnarumma and we lost Calhanoglu, but we already spent 55 million, and yep. We had to spend those money, and I'm happy with it. Of course, I will be happier with Donnarumma, but who cares? That's the past.
Yeah, you know, I think you make a very important point, and this is something that I highlighted last week. It's, you know, the loans with options to buy are great, and I think in this case it worked out well for Milan because, again, they got him for cheaper than what his market value is now. But at the same time, when you spend the money, it's not that to keep the player. It's not like you're improving your team. You're just keeping what you had. But again, Tomori was a no-brainer. Great move.
Yeah.
Milan.
Absolutely.
Let me ask you this. We talked about Pessi quite a bit, and obviously he improved a ton last season. I think he went from being, you know, a good player to an elite player at his position. I thought last season Calabria improved a lot. I didn't expect them to make a leap like that. Is there any player currently on Milan that you think, maybe – at the end of next season, we'll be talking about them in the way we're talking about Kessié and Calabria making a leap?
Well, in the last season, we saw a lot of AC Milan players who did very, very good. So there are not so many players who didn't raise the bar at the highest level. And my two takes are Rafa Leão. We can't wait for him. Like, we cannot wait anymore for him. And I think the next season could be the one where he could become a solid player. Talking about his mental aspect, so determination, etc. The other player is Hauge. If AC Milan will keep Hauge, because we saw him in the early beginning of the season, he was very good. He scored like 5 goals playing 10 games or stuff like that. But he played for a season and a half, like non-stop for a season and a half, So this is the first time he had the chance to recovering, to relaxing, etc., etc. So I think the next season, Hauge could be a great addition to Pioli's starting 11.
Yeah, I definitely agree, Leao. Hopefully he turns it around because the talent is there. And speaking of talent, you are just one of the great hosts of the Vox Box podcast. I love chatting with you. We've had Giulio on a few times as well. I always say it, you know, people ask me recommendations on Calcio podcast and learning Italian. Well, you can do both by checking this pod out. It's really awesome, a lot of fun, a lot of laughs, but these guys really, really know their calcio. There's a great representation of a lot of teams there. So Daniele, tell us a little bit about what's been going on at Vox to Box recently and what you guys have planned in the future.
So I think that we are sort of on a sort of turning point for Box to Box, because this season was very good for us, and we want to do even better for the next. So we are working in order to do to create a sort of video podcast, because we want to go on Twitch, we want to go also on YouTube, etc., etc. And so we want to go from only audio to video and audio. So this is what we want and what we work on it during the summer, etc. So Box to Box will be always the same, but also in video. So this is our plan, and let's see, let's hope. We are of course focused on Euro 2020.
Yeah.
We are doing some live from our Telegram channel. The name is V2B Fellas, of course, it's in Italian. And we are trying to do something like the Jalapak Band in the past.
Yeah.
If you want to watch the game, about hearing some guys saying things and not the original audio, etc., go on Telegram, search V2B Fellas, and we're going to, I think the next one will be England, Ukraine, I think. And of course we will root for Andriy Shevchenko. We Rossoneri will root for Andriy Shevchenko, but yes, it's funny. It's fun.
Well, I think any sensible person is going to be rooting for the Ukraine in that one. Okay, yeah. Daniele, I can't thank you enough for doing this. I love chatting calcio with you. Love Box to Box. Everyone, again, check it out. And I look forward to chatting with you, you know, during the season again. Hopefully I'll get to meet you for a game at San Siro now that life is coming back to normal. But thanks so much for the great work. Always a real pleasure to chat with you.
Thank you very much, David. Thank you for having me. It's always a pleasure. And I wait for you here in Milan in order to go to San Siro together. Absolutely.